Hello, America and the world. This is Radio Free Market, and I am your host, Michael McKay. We are behind the lines of socialism, my friends, and Radio Free Market is the voice of free people and free markets. Today, I will be presenting to you a talk I gave on October 14, 2010, to the Austrian Economics Club, University of Iowa. This club was started in 2008 and now has 78 members. I encourage you to visit their Facebook page, contact them, and discuss with them how you can start an Austrian Economics Club at your college, your high school, your military unit, your neighborhood, or any other group you belong to or can put together. My talk was titled Standing Up for Freedom and Rallying Common Sense. After the talk, I informally answered questions on topics regarding the future price of gold and how we might transition to a financial system based on free banking, sound money, and without a central bank like our Federal Reserve. So next you will hear me starting my talk after being introduced by Mr. Drew Helm, who is one of our special commentators at Radio Free Market and was the producer of our recent show, Stateless and Yet More Peaceful in Somalia. Please note that my initial presentation is only 25 minutes long. The second half of this recording is our discussion of gold, free banking, and sound money. I hope that by listening to this, you too will go away with some ideas on how you can stand up for freedom. And thank you for listening.
He's also the host of Radio Free Market. He's the author of the book Secrets About Money. It's a great book about reality economics, which is very synonymous with Austrian economics, and it's definitely a good read. It's a quick read, and it's just really simple, really powerful message in there. Definitely suggest taking a look at that sometime. And without further ado, here's Michael McKay.
Well, thank you very much, Drew. And I brought extra copies of the book for everyone to have. So I actually prepared remarks. I normally don't prepare remarks when I speak, because normally I just don't have time, but there was so much I wanted to share with you guys that I decided I was going to not talk for 3 hours and instead prepare something and maybe I could get it done in about 20 minutes. Before I get started, I wanted to show you something I just bought, and this is called a space pen, and it was developed by NASA, and it's a very interesting little invention. It's called, I'll read this thing in the back, I thought it was very interesting, the M4C Cap-O-Matic Space Pen contains Fisher's black ink, medium point, pressurized cartridge. Originally designed for the NASA astronauts, the pressurized cartridge, filled with Fisher's patented thixotropic viscoelastic ink, allows the user to write in extreme temperatures from minus 30 to 250 degrees Fahrenheit. How with your blood boiling, I don't know. Underwater and at any angle, even upside down. Now, I knew that that NASA commissioned the development of such a pen. And I also knew that the Russians transcended this problem by using pencils. And so millions of dollars went into the development of this pen. So I thought you'd all like to see it. They're still, they're on a closeout on the internet, so you can buy them right now if you want. All right, so what I'm going to speak about tonight is standing up for freedom and rallying common sense. So you all know I have this web radio show, and I'd like all of you to grab one of these cards. Drew has been a special commentator on my show. Andy Katherman, sitting in the back there, is our producer for the show, and Andy helps us enormously. We have other volunteers that have been helping. I also have this as a handout for you guys before you leave. It announces our show tomorrow, which is going to be Water for Sale, Should We Privatize Water, with Dr. David Zetland, and it's a very interesting show. And we've got some other shows that are coming up. The show I did with Drew, we taped last week, is coming up next week, and it's called Stateless and More Peaceful in Somalia with Dr. Benjamin Powell.
Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Radio Free Market. Our show continues now.
So People have asked me what qualifications I had to start my Radio Free Market show. And my answer has been that I was totally unqualified. I did not have a background in radio or broadcasting, and as far as Austrian economics and history was concerned, I viewed myself, and still view myself today, as an autodidactic student, not primarily a teacher. And so why do I do it, and why did I do it? Well, there's two short and rather incomplete answers for me, which includes my and my wife's future, and for my kids and their future, which, by the way, includes all of you and your futures, since you will be making the world that my kids will be living in. So for me, I would like to live in a more sane world, where I'm not penalized for saving, penalized for risking, and penalized for succeeding. Every step of progress in my economic life has been achieved against the headwind of government plunder and intervention. When I was about your age, at 18 years old in 1969, I paid a dime, 10 cents, for a soda pop in a glass bottle, and 35 cents a gallon to fill up my gas tank. By 1979, I was spending 25 to 35 cents for that soda pop, and was feeling lucky to spend only a dollar and a quarter for gas while I waited in gas lines for hours to get it. And oh yeah, only on odd number days, since my license plate ended in an odd number. So I have a joke when it comes to these stories from old times, you know. So there's a grandpa and a grandson, and the grandson asked the grandpa, said, "So what was it like for you when you were a kid?" And he says, "Oh, when I was a kid, I'd take a dollar to the grocery store, and I'd get a loaf of bread, a gallon of milk, pound of bacon, I'd get some candy, and I'd come back with change in my pocket." "Well, Grandpa, what happened?" "Well, they installed the security cameras." Yeah, so that's one way of looking at inflation. But there are a lot of other examples. 5 cent phone calls went to 10 cents. Free 411 information calls went out the window. But one of the largest shocks that I personally experienced is when I moved from my native Michigan to California, Southern California. So there was that disparity as well. And I pulled over on the side of the road in South Laguna Beach, California, to look at a billboard, because it took the breath out of me, where I saw condos starting at $250,000 in 1979. Now, the interesting thing is that you could buy actually a nice house in Laguna Beach for $35,000 in 1965. So that had already really started a massive trajectory in that period of time right there as well. The net result is that I started my adult life feeling like the train had already pulled out of the station, and that I was always running behind it. And this created in me, in my early adulthood, a mentality of seeking the brass ring. Now, for those of you that are too young to know what that means, way back, actually even before my time, they used to have merry-go-rounds where you would lean out the side and try to pick a brass ring off of a hook, and it was considered the big prize of the day. And the brass ring, it became a symbol for the big prize. Well, I fell on my ass as a result of it often. I didn't go bankrupt, but I went in hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt a couple of times trying to start businesses during the 1980s. And I chose to fill those holes and pay off those debts, but my own economic ignorance of bubbles and the mechanics of inflation cost me dearly. By my own reckoning, it cost me maybe 12 to 15 years of productivity, since I had to first make the disastrous mistakes and then to overcome them. It also caused me to miss opportunities, very big opportunities, much like the biggest bull run of the stock market from 1980 to 2000, and to instead be chewed up and spit out in the real estate bubble in Austin, Texas in 1984. That tragedy of that ignorance wiped me out financially and heavily contributed to me losing my first marriage, which has made the reconciliation with my now 30-year-old daughter a challenge up until recently. I'm happy to report that it is today finally in a very positive place. I tell you this so that you can know that studying Austrian economics is so much more important than for you just to know about the technical stuff that you may learn along the way, which is all good to know, by the way. The value, really, is for you to have the opportunity, the best opportunity, to have your best or at least better and more happy life. Not a guarantee, by the way. There are a few guarantees in life, and having knowledge does not guarantee that you will have a good life, but, and this is a very big but, ignorance will always hurt you in life, eventually, and maybe even fatally. And I know I've seen ignorance in its many forms tragically affect many people's lives, even drastically. At a minimum, it hurts. In an economic environment that is ruled by intervention and its philosophy of central control, it incentivizes people to hurt one another. In fact, it fosters a competition of hurt or be hurt kind of mentality. It hurts to continue to be a sheep when you have to worry whether the next time you're sheared that you will also be skinned. Intervention incentivizes us to be the skinners rather than the skinnies. And how do we see skinners? How does that show up? I just call that privilege-ism. And we see it in many forms, for we are actually, all of us, swimming in it. Progressive taxation, where 40% of the population pay no income taxes. Welfare of individual sort and corporate sort. Bureaucracies, which is another form of welfare with central control added in. Subsidy seekers to support non-economically viable endeavors. Licensing seekers pulling ladders to limit new competitors or otherwise limiting trade to benefit themselves. Regulation seekers limiting the use of your property so they can have more of what they want at your expense. They all want something for nothing or something for less risk. They transfer their risk to you, their life burdens to you. You get to carry your own and theirs as well. So why is this the case? What propels people to do this, to try to get something for nothing? In one word, we all would like a majority of stability and certainty in our lives and less risk in our future. And I'm quite sure that we all want that. To have the opposite of more instability and more uncertainty in our lives, on balance, would create a life of fear. We would not know where our next meal was to come from, or even if it would come, if we can extend that lack of at least some certainties to all other areas of our life. So this is quite a natural impulse that one of my teachers said propels all of us, and is actually quite natural in nature as well. Quite naturally, we seek to know our future. In our language, in our economic language, we seek the ability to calculate and to forecast. And this is one of the most natural and persistent things that humans do. We try to estimate how much money we need, when we have to do the laundry again, go to the grocery store, how much time we are going to need to get somewhere. Whether it's time, groceries, laundry, or money, we are constant calculators on a small-time minutia level. But on a large-scale level, we seek greater stability of income, relationships, and rules so we can figure out, as in calculate our way through, the larger questions and issues of life like career, family, retirement planning, etc. Austrian economics helps us understand the necessary basic ingredients of what I call the art of living together. Austrian economics gives us a fundamental understanding of the needed structure where we can all experience, or at least have the opportunity to experience, our best life via more peaceful and more cooperative means. Notice I did not say forceful means, and notice also that I did not say ideal means. I think we would all welcome the notion of having everything we want merely by wishing for it. The idea of Aladdin's lamp pervades the whole world's consciousness in that everybody wants more for less effort. This is an innate human trait, and as it is an innate principle in nature, even water seeks the path of least resistance. But we humans immediately bump into problems when we bump into the next person, because we then have to decide, will we get what we want by force, or will we get what we want through peaceful means? Now here I would like to mention for you to look up the work of Hans Hermann Hoppe and some of his examples of this, where he talks about the Garden of Eden and Robinson Crusoe. So there's some, I think you have some Hoppe works here. If not, we're going to have to make sure you get some. So I want to mention a term that was coined by Mr. Jeffrey Tucker, which you can hear on my Radio Free Market interview with him, titled The Power of Manners in Human Cooperation. The term is the second step of logic, and I would invite each and every one of you to, before you forget it, to please write that down. You know, the second step of logic. I remember my first reading of Basquiat and Henry Hazlitt years ago, and being introduced to the concept of what is seen and what is not seen. And under Basquiat, his essay, The Broken Window Fallacy, you can Google that, read that, as well as Hazlitt's entire book, Economics in One Lesson, is significantly on that point.
Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Radio Free Market. Our show continues now.
So I learned how it was very important to consider the unintended consequences of any intervention action by the government versus an action between people who are free to cooperate with each other, and in that freedom discover the better ways to get things done. An example of this second step of logic I just showed you: what is seen and what is not seen. Another example is that I like to use is the phrase TANSTOFL, which is an acronym that means there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. On the surface, this seems very self-evident, but if you add an explanation that somebody always pays, then you've added a second step into someone's thinking, which clarifies the point, which really can make them think about it. Instead of them merely thinking, okay, so somebody always pays, so what? They are more likely to ask, who is this person that always pays? Is it me? Is it you? Is it you sometime later in your future? Or me sometime later in my future? If we can get someone to ask that kind of question, then we have infected them with Austrian economics. Austrian economics basically gets people to think about the second and third, etc., steps of logic. Many of you may know Shane Host, I think is how he pronounces his last name, Host, is that correct? Last year, Shane was here. Is he graduated? I know he was working on his PhD. Is he around?
He's here.
He's around?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the story, I won't go into the whole story. He can tell you the whole story. But he was in a bar, and he was explaining money to a friend. And he poured water into his friend's beer, which may be now his former friend's beer. I don't know. To explain how creating more money out of thin air reduces the value of each existing dollar already in existence. He was infecting his friend to look beyond the obvious to attain deeper understanding. Getting yourself and other people to even ask that second question, that second step of logic, while not a perfect solution to all problems, goes very far to helping add sanity to the world. And this brings me all the way back to the second reason why I do this, my kids, which also includes you guys. I think that if I, and therefore you, can get into the habit of asking yourself and others these second step questions, and B, coming up with good answers, then we all benefit by creating a better world. And finally, I would say, don't wait until you're qualified. Go ahead now. Stand up for freedom in every single way that you're attracted to, or where you see an opportunity or a need. Here, as I see it, are some of the things that urgently need to be done more and right now. Many of these come under the heading of what I call grabbing the spotlight and the microphone. And by the way, even if it is uncomfortable to do so, because it has never been comfortable for me to do this. You know, it's something that someone once told me, that everything you want in life is at least one step outside your comfort zone. This is included. So these options that I recommend that you guys do is, they include podcasts, blogging, making videos, speaking out in small groups or large, even professionally, becoming what is called one of the talking professions or their derivatives that speak to churches, schools, clubs, or anyone who will listen. You can write letters constantly to newspapers, or just send them to your family. One thing that I think would be particularly effective and could also be quite profitable would be being a free market Austrian economics comedian. There has always been a market for this kind of thing. And there were two in American history that were not, while they weren't Austrian because they didn't have that training, they were definitely, please, more common sense oriented, and we're going to come back to this term common sense again, I'm sure, in a little bit. But one in particular that I like is Mark Twain, and he's got a couple of lines that I think are just gorgeous, so I'm going to share this with you now. How do you tell an anti-communist? It's someone who understands Marx. That's pretty profound. You know, this was written over 100 years ago. And my favorite of all is by Mark Twain, "I don't tell jokes, I just watch the government and report the facts." The value that comedy has is that it can rally common sense. It gets us all to agree at the same time that this is the proper way of thinking. I think it is its unique magic, and therefore opportunity. So if any of you have any propensity or skill in that direction, I urge you to develop it. My personal choice was to do some combination, as I was able to do, and become what I call an ABC's teacher for freedom and economic basics. I think of myself as really kind of a kindergarten teacher. And that's what I consider myself. But however you personally choose to stand up for freedom, if you choose to do so, let the world know that you know that cooperation trumps coercion in creating peace and prosperity in the world. I want to thank you very much for belonging to this club, and I haven't even met all of you, but I'm very proud to know, in one sense, all of you. Thank you very much.
Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Radio Free Market. Our show continues now.
So we have a few minutes to talk about different things. I have a couple other doodads that I can share with you that I thought you might find interesting. And as was mentioned, I own an investment firm, and so I'm rather in the deep end of the pool when it comes to gold, and I know gold and silver pretty good. But so we can talk about money and things of that nature, and we don't really even have to finish all of it. I had one other thing I wanted to bring. It looks like I left. And I'm sorry that I left it, because, well, you'll have to listen to the show I'm taping tomorrow, because I'm going to read it to the at the end of the show. Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, I have you beat. I can remember Oscar Pfizer.
There you go.
And I was in Waco the year, Texas, the year before the Arab oil embargo. So you're a young whippersnapper.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much.
We were talking a little earlier about the, how you go from the Federal Reserve to, say, well, first of all, assuming that you're not a big friend of the Federal Reserve.
That would be correct.
I thought that was a safe assumption. How do you go from there to, say, for example, back to the gold standard, or when gold is priced so high right now?
Right. Well, there's a that's an excellent question, and I am actually working on an essay on that point right now. There's two points that I'd make that I don't think we're going to have time to develop it because it would consume a lot of time. But happy to spend time and talk with you about it more later. But the first thing is that. You can't just look at gold. I'll read this because this is actually on this exact point that I was going to add to this essay. Looking at gold or a gold standard without looking at the structure of the system itself is like looking at steel or brick without looking at the architecture. And so it isn't just gold that is the important part of the conversation that needs to be discussed. It is how we actually have our monetary system, our banking system. So you can't meaningfully, in my opinion, discuss gold or a gold standard without actually adding free banking. And why free banking? Because the market, I think, has to have the opportunity to discover the value of having 100% reserves. And one of the books that should be over there that you better have is Murray Rothbard's book, Mystery of Banking. Mystery of Banking should be over there. The other one, no, you got that. What has government done to our money? You don't have it. Well, I'll have to get you that. So let's see if this thing writes upside down. I guess it does. It's first time I'm writing it. I'll send you that book. He makes the case for the free banking scenario in that book, also in Mystery of Banking, which is also very good. On that, probably the best book that has been written on banking ever. But you can bet that. Let me put it this way. First of all, I take the view that right now, the monetary ignorance that is in society is so wide and so deep, and the entrenched interests are so completely in control. It is tantamount to the Catholic Church having its control on the populace in medieval times, where the concept of excommunication was such a terror to people because it meant death, because anyone who was excommunicated from the Church was there was a mark basically put on that person where any other person that had anything to do with them was also excommunicated. So they put shunning to a major effective tool at that time. And I like to point out that as strong a grip as that had on the consciousness of everyone, within a relatively short period of time, it got tremendously loosened. Now, how long a period of time was that? You know, if you want to just take Martin Luther's nailing the edicts on the door of the church, you know, maybe a couple hundred years. Maybe 100 years or so. So, is everyone waking up to end the Fed? Is that going to actually transform everybody's minds in 5 years, 10 years, 30 years, 50 years, or what? I don't know. I do think that there's an opportunity for us to make a dramatic shift very, very quickly in the course of the next several years because of the internet, because we can share so much information. You know, and in sharing information, you don't even have to share a whole book. You can share an article, a snippet, a couple of paragraphs that can transform people's lives. And you can put it on an email and share it with 100 people, 1,000 people all at once. You can create a podcast and have three sentences transform 1,000 people's lives that you'll never know and never meet. So it's today I think we have the opportunity of seeing huge change very quickly as a potentiality, for real. But the other question that really is important, and it's part of your question, I think, is what happens? What is the next money, and how do we make that transition to it? And actually, I can't really spend the time to go into it all with you right now, because my essay is called How Do You Prepare for the Next Money? And the reality is that we need to primarily do what I was talking about today. You've got to start talking about it. You've got to get it out there. You have to do something to get it into the lexicon of people. In my little book, I point out that there are four basic things that people need to know about money that most people don't know about. Fiat money, legal tender law, fractional reserve banking, and inflation. The teeth of those four are legal tender law. That's the teeth. So if you want to take the teeth out of the dog, it's in legal tender laws. So how do you get the teeth out of the dog is the question. How you get the teeth out of the dog is by using other money. That's called civil disobedience, by the way. You know? And so, if you're a chiropractor and you take apple pies, or you're a gas station owner and you take rabbits, or you're a restaurateur and take, you know, silver, all three of which, by the way, are real life examples that are happening in Michigan right now, you're actually diluting the effect of these legal tender laws. That's a very, very powerful thing to do. And it's getting other people to think. Because here's another, this is one of the basic points that I bring out in my essay. The seller always knows their price. The seller always knows their price. So, if I'm the seller, and you come to me, and you ask me how much is this book, and I say it's, you know, $5, $10, whatever. You say, well, I don't have $5, $10. Then I, as the seller, can think, and I can say, okay, how many chickens do you have? In other words, the seller sets the price. The buyer determines whether the price is going to get paid. That's how the equation works. And so, because sellers always know the price, sellers will discover the next money that will work if one stops working. That's how it always has worked. I have an essay in my archives of back in the early part of our country's development, how stores, the common conversation would be, the seller would come in, come and meet the buyer, and say, in what money will you pay? And based on the answer to that question, the price would be set. You see? Now, is this worth four chickens, three chickens, two chickens? I don't know. Me as a seller, I'm going to guess. Maybe I'm going to get it wrong the first time. Maybe you as the buyer are going to overpay or underpay. But the market will figure it out if that becomes the medium of exchange. The interesting thing about gold and silver is its persistence over time. In Malaysia right now, there's a state in the north of Malaysia, and I can't remember the name of it offhand, Keratin or something like that. And they have just allowed the silver dirham and the gold dinar to be legal tender. And there's quite a movement that has been going on in Malaysia for the last 10 years. And I have a small book that was written in the mid-90s by a Spanish-born Muslim by the name of Vadillo on the return of the gold dinar and how it conforms with Islamic law. It's a very interesting book. The interesting point about the dirham is the silver dirham is a small coin, rather thin, about the size of one of our quarters, but actually thinner, and nicely embossed, has a nice little feel to it, but light. And with that, you can buy a chicken. Well, guess what? 2,000 years ago, you could buy one chicken with that one silver dirham. With a gold dinar today, which is worth about 180, 200 bucks, you can buy two goats. 2,000 years ago, two goats. So what is going to happen is that people are going to discover monies that are more persistent. And actually, the punchline, and I'll give you the punchline of my essay because it isn't coming out for a while because I have a little more research to do on it, is it is you don't want to measure your net worth in dollars anymore. You want to measure your net worth in how many ounces of silver and gold do you have. And because that's really how we're going to have to measure our net worth. Because that's basically, in my opinion, what we're going to be forced to. But when is the question. And, you know, if you go back and look at the events that happened after 1971 when Nixon took us off the last vestige of the gold standard, well, everybody thought the world's going to collapse, the money's going to completely collapse. In 1979, there was a Pulp Fiction book called The Crash of 79 that I read back in 1979. And it was about currency and monetary wars. And what did they do? They figured out a way to kick the can down yet a few more decades. Now we're faced with the same thing today. Guess what? It could happen tomorrow. It may be happening right now. And it could be 50 years from now. And that's the darn thing about knowing Austrian economics. You know the what. You'll never know the when. So my belief is that the when will come with a whoosh, and it'll probably be announced on a Sunday night. I look for different indicators. One of the things that I find disturbing right now is Bank of America has advertisements on their new ATM machines that will accept dollar bills into it. Now, I ask myself this question. At a gas station or at a car wash, I get it. No problem. Dollar bills go in. But why would you ever have a bank that takes dollar bills in? If you're a business owner, you don't stand in an ATM and shove, you know, hundreds of dollars of bills in from your cash registers in one day. You know? I have to believe that there's some kind of organized understanding that we are going to be converting to a new money. And that this would be an orderly way. You come in and you bring in your new dollars and you'll get your new Ameros or Unitas or Bancors or whatever they're going to call them. You know? So I think that they definitely could kick the can down the road a little bit. So how would we transition into a gold standard? I mean, first of all, I think it basically requires two things. It requires a collapse of the existing system and a broad-scale knowledge on the populace to do so. Because otherwise, if you want to see what happens after a collapse, look at the Soviet Union. They don't necessarily go to a much better thing right away. I mean, Zimbabwe's has collapsed. They're using the U.S. dollar currently while they try to kickstart their next fiat money. Unless broad-scale education occurs, and that, I think, requires consciousness shifting, I don't think you're going to get a big, big change. So I actually think it could be hundreds of years from now, personally. You know, but I do believe that it'll happen because the legacy of all of us, particularly you guys, because you're young enough that you're going to have your whole life. The headwind I fought, you know, I have to say, I'm so excited that you guys have this knowledge. Because at this particular time, you are so better suited to understand it. I learned and then later taught negotiation theory back in the 80s. And there's a basic principle in negotiation theory that a tactic perceived is a tactic disarmed. Well, it's not quite true. Because a tactic that you perceive, while you can see it, kind of like a kung fu move you see happening, you know, well, maybe you're smart enough and fast enough that you can counterbalance it and counteract it, but maybe not either. You know, all that it does is it gives you an advantage. But that advantage is significant, and you do need to know it. And the deeper you get into this, the deeper your advantage is going to be. So that's as much as we could do right now. Anybody else have a question? Let's turn the floor open. Sure, Zach.
You mentioned investing in gold and silver.
Yeah.
And, for going into the market right now, this may be the first time investing. Would you say that there's going to be a retrenchment from these levels because there's been a huge run up this year? Or do you think prices are here to stay and the dollar is going to continue to weaken from this point? I know it's hard in the short term, but long term.
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. Well, I wish I knew for certain. I think short term that we're going to see a little correction. I think it could happen in the course of the next month. 2 months. I think by the end of the year we're going to see 1,500 gold. Shortly after that, I think 1,700 gold, you know, sometime between now and June of next year, you know, 2,000 by a year plus from now. It could all be much, much higher. There's a lot of dynamics out there. First of all, if you don't know it, you should know GATA.org. That is GATA.org. That is the Gold Action. Can't remember the entire translation of the acronym. But these volunteer people have been tracking the manipulation of gold and silver markets for many years, and they finally got their day in front of Congress at the CFTC, or I should say the CFTC, on March 25th. And March 25th, the head of this outfit went ahead and testified in front of Congress. And the punchline is that the manipulation of the silver market in particular was revealed.
Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Radio Free Market. Our show continues now.
And you can go on to the CFTC website, March 25th event, the hearings they had. It was on position limits in the gold and silver market is what the hearings were about. And you can read about it, and it's very, very interesting. I want to show you something that I actually had printed off to give to each and every one of you. And but I have another joke for you before we get too far away. Actually, this is not quite a joke, but it's kind of a funny, insightful point. And it's by Richard Russell. Richard Russell is the granddaddy of all investment newsletter writers. He's been writing it continuously, the Dow Theory Letters, since 1959. When I started subscribing to him years ago, I did so because I wanted somebody who is pro-stock market when I was anti-stock market. Well, now he's completely anti-stock market. So, it's pretty interesting. And he's very, very, very much pro-gold. He made this very insightful point. He said, would you take the government's word for it should some member of officialdom hand you a wooden head and tell you it was worth $100? Well, would you? If not, why would you accept their word that a piece of paper or an electronic blip, either of which can be created ad infinitum, represents $100 of purchasing power? Think about it. Very interesting. So I'm going to show you this chart here that came from Sprott Investing in Toronto, and I have copies of this. In fact, why don't we do it this way? So this was put out by Sprott Investing. Sprott is a very large investment firm in Toronto, and Mr. Sprott is highly regarded in the gold arena. And what this chart shows is investors' gold exposure, gold and mining shares as a percent of global assets. We're not talking about central banks here, folks. We're talking about estimates of individuals investing. And if you look at it, 1921, 28%. Well, 1921, there was pretty much of a gold standard going on, so it would have been pretty much what you would have expected to see. 1932 was before the confiscation in the United States. It was still at 20%. 1948, after Bretton Woods, 30%. 1981, right after the peak of the last gold mania, 26%. Now, 0.8%. What that basically tells you is that we are sitting on the in a time where there's very few people that, relatively speaking, own gold and silver, relatively speaking. So 5,000 gold, 10,000 gold? It's very reasonable to think in five-figure gold. It's very reasonable to be thinking in 500 or more dollar ounce gold or ounce silver. Yeah.
Does this discount like ETF exposure?
This actually doesn't tell me much. I tried to find more detail on it. This source here that it refers to, I could not find additional information on it this morning. I just pulled this together this morning to show you. And I got this originally from Casey Research. Casey Research is who I actually pulled this from. I'm a subscriber from them as well. And they had a presentation by Mr. Sprott at their summit, Investor Summit in San Diego last week. And this was part of the presentation. So if you want to spend a few hundred dollars, you can get the tapes of the lectures and get the detail of it. It is available, but I don't have that detail right here. But this dovetails very nicely with what I've been finding from other sources around the world. There's very little gold in the hands of most people, and I think there's the stage is set for a mania.
This is Michael McKay at Radio Free Market. Please visit us on the web at radiofreemarket.com, where you can subscribe for free to all of our shows on iTunes or visit our Radio Free Market archives for easy downloads. And until next week, folks, wherever you are, please stand up for freedom. Thank you for listening.